Well, we are, I think we're in the midst or at the start of an incredible summer of sports. And I think whether you like sport or you don't listening to this, you'll be aware of that. So we've got the Olympics and Paralympics coming up in Paris, the Euros before that. There is so much going on in sport, but with all the regular things as well, you think of Wimbledon. We've got the T20 Cricket World Cup. There's so much big picture sport going on. And then locally, you might be playing, involved in your local club or team, park, front, all sorts. Sport is massive. Over 9 million people play each week. And then way, way more will be watching. So we've got an exciting conversation today. My name is Johnny Reed. I work at Christians in Sport. And we're going to be chatting to two people to think through how people are coming to faith, both broadly, but then within the world of sport. And the idea is it encourages you both in your own faith, but also hopefully inspires you to go on and make the most of the opportunity this summer brings to gather people together to share the gospel. So I've got two guests with me. Let me first introduce Phil Knox. Tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Johnny. Great to be with you. My name's Phil Knox. I'm a missiologist, an evangelist, and author at the Evangelical Alliance. Been with EA about 5.5 years. My passion is seeing people come to faith. So we're going to dive into about how I do that in a moment. But I'm married to Danielle. We live in Birmingham. I'm a massive Aston Villa fan, which is a great time. It's a rare good time to be an Aston Villa fan at the moment. I've got two boys, Caleb, who's 11, whose love language is football, and Joss, who's 5, whose love language is fighting. Live in a place called Quinton, part of the leadership team of a local church here as well. So yeah, that's me.
Great. Well, excited to hear lots more about all of that. And then Graham Daniels, Dano, again, do the same. Tell us who you are.
Well, I work with Johnny at Christians in Sport. And as I'm listening to Phil there, I'm thinking, what a contrast this is. His team's just got into the Champions League. And I'm celebrating that Cambridge United finished 6th from bottom of League One. Because to us, that's easier than winning League Two next season if we could stay in the top of the bottom 6 in League One. So very different, contrasting experiences here, Phil. You know, the high life and the little life.
What does Paul say? He's learned to be content in all circumstances.
Exactly. So you are such a nice man to work with. You encourage me so often. Every time I see you. But great, Johnny. And I'm just thrilled about what we're doing here because I've read Phil's work on these 6 big themes, the big prospects of how people come to faith and evidence of how they do. And boy, it's an eye-opener for us when we think about a wider culture and sport. So great work. I'm enthused about this.
Great. And I'm sure you'll touch on it as well. Graham's done research and further study, PhD, around people coming to faith in professional football. So we'll weave those in as well as we reflect on these themes together. But Phil, you described yourself as a missiologist. What is that? And why is that relevant to sort of our conversation today?
Yeah, it's niche, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, it is.
And I'm a student of mission. So I study kind of that how mission works. And so what I try to do is try to understand the various pathways by which people come to faith so that we might better equip and inspire the church to make the most of those pathways. So I work for the Evangelical Alliance. We're 600 organizations, 3,000 churches, around 23,000 individuals. And one of the ways in which we serve our members is having a kind of bird's eye view of the UK and really trying to understand where is God at work and how do we make the most of those opportunities and see where God's spirit is moving. Church leaders especially really want to know where to invest their limited, finite evangelistic resources, energy, finance. One thing we constantly hear from our members is what are the ways in which people are becoming Christians? And so we try and help there. So that's my job as a missiologist.
Great. Well, I think let's dive in. Bring us up to speed then. You've done research recently. Maybe just give us a little bit of background of the research you've done, how you got about it. But then what are you seeing at the moment?
Yeah, so we kind of gather our kind of intel from a few different places, really. So first of all, we do really big bits of research. So there's most significantly recently a big bit called Talking Jesus, 2022 study, interviewed 4,000 people, what they thought of Christians and Jesus, and then an in-depth focus study on 900 Christians as to their attitudes towards evangelism, but also how they came to faith. So we do those bits of research. We've got another bit that we're leaning into this year, which will come out next year, which is a more qualitative study of around 100 people's journeys to faith. But we've also got, as the EA, we chair a think tank called the Evangelism Advisory Group, which brings together evangelists and missiologists from every major denomination, background, ethnicity, demograph, to ask what, where are people coming to faith in those. But also we interact with leaders on almost a daily basis. And I get really annoying. I'm continually asking people, what have been the themes in the people that you've seen become Christians? So that's where we kind of gather that from.
Great. And so as you've done that, you've kind of got six themes, which you've kind of pulled out. And there may be more in time. We pray there will be. But six right now, which you're going to focus on.
Yeah,
and
great.
We thought we'd be able to just go through them, wouldn't we? Let's go through the six, see how they're resonating, see what you guys have learned from that, and then think that through a little bit with the sporting lens as well, as we think ahead of sport and the summer.
Yeah, super. And I guess that to kind of help us here, what I'll do is I'll take us, so you can visualize it as you listen to this podcast, I'll take us around almost the rooms of a house. I don't know about you, I'm a visual person. And so the first one is, we're going to look at the hallway. So imagine, walk with me into my missional house, if you will. And the hallways, it's called the hallway because the American pastor, Kerry Newhoff, he describes the online world as the new foyer for the church. So few people go anywhere without kind of looking online first. And I think when people are exploring faith, that's no difference. So in this Talking Jesus research, when non-Christians were asked, where would you look to find out more about the Christian faith? Many people won't be surprised to know that the top answer is Google, which means that when we as churches and organizations are kind of working with kind of our internet analytics, we need to be kind of on there somewhere if people are going to find us. But also, you won't be surprised to know UK adults spend about 2.5 hours on social media each day, consuming all kinds of content. And occasionally, what's really exciting is at the moment that content is Christian content. So all of us will be aware that the algorithms are constantly throwing us content that kind of relates to us to try and hit our dopamine and making sure we keep engaging and keep scrolling down our phones. And if we watch it, then it sends us more of it. But what the algorithms also do is they occasionally send us content and kind of as a kind of way of testing whether we're interested in a certain thing. And what's exciting is we're hearing stories of people who are being sent like Christian content. And the more that they watch that and the more they get sense of that. And what I really believe is that the Holy Spirit's in some of that, that actually some people who would never, there's no human evangelist involved, that often what they're doing is they just, because the sheer quantity of time they're spending on their phones, occasionally they come across something. And that is playing, what we're finding in missiologically is that is playing a part in people coming to faith. So for example, spoke to a pastor a few months ago who said that they'd had more people come to their faith through TikTok than through personal invitation in the last 6 months. We interviewed a girl, you can see the interview on our Evangelical Alliance website, who said her journey to faith started when she stumbled across Christian videos on social media. And then finally, from that big bit of research, when we asked 900 practicing Christians, kind of, how did you come to follow Jesus for yourself? 5% said Christian content shared on social media by people they didn't know. 4% said Christian content shared on social media by people they did know, and 6% said attending online church. Now those percentages, 4, 5, and 6%, might seem really small, but by the time you take out everyone who became a Christian because they grew up in a Christian home, by the time you take out anyone who became a Christian before, you know, say 2015, that's a huge proportion of people. Of those who are left, suddenly that 4, 5, 6% becomes really statistically significant. And the futurist Patrick Dixon has said that he thinks in the decades to come, it'll be almost impossible for someone to become a Christian without the influence of some kind of digital content. So personally, I'm really, really excited by this, because I think just as in the early church, you know, the gospel spread rapidly down the kind of Roman road, I think the kind of the future generations will come to faith through the information superhighway. And that's really exciting.
That's great. It's really encouraging. Like, Dan, I'll reflect as well with my role to digital Christian sport. Yeah. But from you and what we've noted this, haven't we, within the advent of social media and sports people who have a faith, probably slightly more experienced sports people or elite sports people, they've begun speaking a little bit more about their faith online, haven't they? When maybe sort of 20, 30 years ago, it was harder to be a Christian and elite sports person. You were speaking to that briefly.
Yeah, no, it's a very niche thing, but it's proved to be significant culturally. Phil, if we went back even 10 years, but certainly 20 years, if you were a very, very famous footballer, for example, and you're in your early 20s, the odds are you didn't come from a church background. Sometimes you did, but often you didn't. And so we'd find out about a 23-year-old who'd come to Christ at Premier League level. If there was a sniff that they were a Christian, we'd get hundreds of requests a year to have them speak. But we said no all the time, simply because they're babies, they're not formed, they're not stuck into church and so on. So they need nurturing, and their pastor needs to nurture them in order to get to that point. So we just felt we were always saying no to requests, and we got really caned for it sometimes at Christians in Sport. But now the whole world has changed. Hundreds of people in professional sport talk about their faith online. The whole culture is changing in numerous ways. The digital window has probably exposed those opportunities, really. So now it's very different for us. We don't need to be asked anymore because everybody knows scores of people who are Christians in sport at the top level. So it's a changed world. I don't know that it ultimately helps deal immediately with pastoral care, and discipleship for a very young Christian who goes public. But certainly, it's made an enormous impact on young people who love sport, who read the testimonies of their heroes online. So it's a big change. And really, from your point of view, in terms of the digital opportunities here, you've driven this for us for the last 12 years, really. So you're right behind this.
And I think it's interesting with my kind of church hat on as well as my work hat on. I think we can make a mistake when it comes to social media, can't we? Of thinking we just need to, it's like a church notice sheet. We get the information out of the events which are coming up. Well, actually, like you said, it's dopamine. It's entertainment, it's information, it's inspiration. Those are the things which really work on social media, less so than a come to my event, come to my this, come to my that. And so it's working hard, isn't it, to think through what are the clips? What are the 30 seconds? What is the 90 seconds, maybe from my online church service I pull off? From For us, it'll be from our podcast interviews or last week, Scottie Scheffler, world number one in the world golfer, won the Masters, spoke very clearly of his faith in the conference afterwards. There's a minute clip. We were able to share that. Might be one of our most watched clips. So 10, 20, 30,000 people have seen that. And I had conversations with my friends. I was on the golf course with friends who don't know Jesus. I've sent it to them and gone, have a watch of this. What do you think? And it led to conversation. And so I think that'd be the challenge. If you're listening and you're a church leader, you've got any influence of communication strategy, to be quite niche, be wary of just giving out information. That doesn't work. Ultimately, people aren't going to see that. The best way to kind of help people find out about your church in some ways is to infuse them and inspire them and give them content. And so think that through. It needs a machine behind it, doesn't it, in terms of pulling things out and making that work. But it's we've seen that encouraging, whether they're amateur sports people or elite sports people telling their stories, connecting how their sport they work together. We are hearing stories of people going, I watched that. Like you say, Phil, the algorithm serving it up to people and they're seeing it. And it's exciting, isn't it? It seems like a new way.
And I think my encouragement, if you're listening to this as a sports enthusiast and a Christian, it's a couple of things that I just encourage you to do. Now and again, when you see content from Christians in Sport, from Ballers in God, from something where you think actually that can connect, don't be afraid to retweet that. Because you will have lots of people or share on social media. You'll have lots of friends and people who aren't believers who see that. It just creates plausibility structures around that. So I've got a mate who's well into wrestling, and recently Hulk Hogan got baptized. And so I just sent him the clip and said, you should get on this train, mate. And I think, and it just for him just creates a bit of that plausibility structure. I think, and the other thing I'd say around the digital is if you're a church leader and you're listening to this, if you're doing some events that we're going to get onto later on this podcast around this great summer of sport, make sure your website does you justice, because most churches I go to, I preach in a different church almost every Sunday. Most churches are way better in person than their website tells the story of. And in some ways, I wish we all could be better at kind of telling the story of the incredible community and job and gathering that we are as the church. And so when we're promoting what we're doing in terms of sporting engagement events over the summer, let's make sure we do that really well digitally.
Yeah, and that's loads of podcasts, comm strategies, my fun and games, loads of things to look at. But church leaders, that's the hunting the right tip. Remember, your website's not primarily for your church. It's for people looking in. It's for others as well. There's That's a whole different thing. That's a whole different hobby horse I can get on. But let's move from the hallway. Let's move from the hallway, Phil. Where are we moving to next?
Great. Let's move into the living room. So the living room is where friendship happens. And for the, anyone who knows me will know that was one of my great passions in, and enthusiasms is friendship, really. And the Talking Jesus research has repeatedly found, because it was done again, done before in 2015, then again in 22, repeatedly found that the most significant human influence in someone becoming a Christian, tragically for people like me, isn't an evangelist or even a pastor, but it's a friend, a neighbor, a colleague, or a family member. And as I speak to Christians, new Christians all over the UK, when I ask them about their journeys to faith, there's almost always a Christian friend involved. And the last few years, been completely captivated by friendship. Like many people, had a terrible pandemic. Really, my first book came out in March 2020, which, as many people will recall, was the week all the bookshops closed. That was incredibly discouraging and disappointing. But then in the June, tragically, my mum died of cancer, and it was a really difficult season. Two things got me through in that time: faith in Jesus and friendship. And this was at a time of kind of social distancing, social isolation. And so as a kind of, A, as a friend, but B, as a missiologist, just got really captivated around friendship. And we need to be really clear when we talk about the living room that we don't invite people into our living room in order to convert them. We become friends with people because we're made in the image of a relational God. And Jesus invites us to love our neighbor as ourselves. But we do recognize that from the earliest days of Jesus' disciples following him to now, God partners with us in our friendships to see people coming to know Jesus. And so if you're a Christian who's got not yet Christian friends, my deep encouragement is to really pray for them. So, you know, especially kind of sports friends you go to the football with, or a part of your sports club, whatever you're doing in terms of praying for them, just encourage you to intensify your prayers for them. But also, if you're a church leader, my encouragement would be to kind of, whatever you're doing to cultivate friendship within your church, to crank that up a notch. Because the challenge is that the stats tell us we're really struggling in this area. So Talking Jesus found in 2015, when non-Christians were asked, do you know someone who's a practicing Christian? 67% of people said, yeah, I know someone who's a practicing Christian. When that question was asked just 7 years later, that 67% had decreased to 53%. So less and less not yet Christians know a practicing Christian. And at the same time, 46% of Christians don't know a not yet Christian well enough to invite them to church. And I think that's a real challenge for us. That's why what you do as Christians in sport is so important. That's why if you're listening to this and you're part of a sports club engaging regularly with not yet Christians, what you do is absolutely amazing. I really want to encourage you in that, because as a church, we're struggling in that as a whole, because continually the gospel spreads through relationships. Wherever you're at in terms of your confidence to share faith, you will possibly, the only Bible your friends will read, if your friends are going to come to know you, because something, you know, Jesus, it's probably going to be through you. So just really want to encourage you to keep praying, keep living the life, keep inviting them to stuff, and be prepared to share your story of what Jesus has done in your life.
Yeah, no, super. Dano, sport, what makes it uniquely good? I think I want to argue makes it uniquely good for building relationships. Mm-hmm. What's your experience there?
Well, as I'm listening to Phil and thinking West Midlands, I'm remembering I was in touch with somebody the other day called Richard Leadbeater, who's become the pastor of a major London church. And he was reminding me that when he played for Wolves some years ago, a senior pro at the club at the time called Brian Law was a Christian, had become a Christian. And he'd heard that Leddy came from a Christian background, and there was some talk of interest in Christianity, and Leddy tells the story that he was absolutely stunned when Lawsy approached him. You know, the big first team boys never approach an apprentice, you know, a 16-year-old, never talk to them. And he said Lawsy was so friendly, but it took Leddy a year. So Lawsy was friendly every day with him. You literally would never talk to the apprentices. And he says that it took him 6 months to actually believe that Lawsy was interested in talking to him at all. And it took him another 6 months having been invited to come to something with other footballers where there was faith involved. It took him another 6 months to dare to go. Every month he thought he'd go and he bottled it. It was just this profound friendship, and I love the way you put it, Phil. When you come into that living room, we all know the balancing act. It can't be a means to an end.
Right.
It's it's authentic, it's Trinitarian, it's loving, it's kind. And Richard Leadbeater, some years later now, is a pastor of a church making a big dent after his career's finished. But it was a deep friendship from Brian Law that caused it. And of course, the application's straightforward, isn't it? If you play in a sports club, you have an incredible opportunity to be authentic, to be the real deal at that club. And in a way, we should rejoice in that. And we'd be saying, wouldn't we, to church pastors, if there are people in your congregation who really do enjoy sport in any shape or form, supporting and playing, encourage them to build authentic friendships, because you're 90% of the way there, aren't you? You have loads of people that you can know. Be the real deal for them. And it does slowly but surely lead to faith, as your findings show, Phil, for sure.
Yeah, and there's few
Great.
better ways are there to connect with people initially
Yeah.
than sport. I was with you know as at a gathering yesterday, and you suddenly realize I was sat next to a fellow Villa fan, and so we were just basking in each other's joy at the moment.
Yeah,
At the
yeah,
moment,
yeah.
but it's just a wonderful way of connecting with people, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so intuitive, and that's why we don't want to miss it. I think that when you see 46% of Christians from talking Jesus don't know somebody who's not a Christian, you can't but have acquaintances who can become real friends if you're in any way involved in recreation and sport. It's just natural. It's communal. So it's a great opportunity that we must strive to encourage people to take.
Right. Well, let's move from the hallway. Where are we going next, Phil? To the lounge,
We're going into the
and then we're
kitchen
going next
next.
to the
Yeah, we're going
kitchen
to the
next.
kitchen.
Great.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there's more some stronger links than others, but the kitchen is this is what I'd call kind of mercy ministry plus gospel. So, where food is served. The first thing to note in this area is that the church, my word, the church is doing an amazing job. Billions and billions of pounds worth of kind of social care are delivered through the church every year. And every church I interact with is responding to the needs of their community in a really significant way. I'm not sure we celebrate it enough. The church is amazing. And what's particularly fruitful in terms of gospel terms is where those who engage with those ministries are intentionally invited to take the next step. You know, many churches engage with hundreds of people each week. But many of those people are never given then the opportunity to hear the good news as well as experience the good news of Jesus and be invited further on the journey. So my encouragement to the church is to make the most of the opportunities we have when we interact with people in terms of telling them the good news as well as just sharing the good news. I was on the phone to a leader just last week who said that during the pandemic they set up a kind of community grocery. And as well as kind of getting their food, it gave people dignity because they kind of paid for their food each week, a small nominal thing, fill a basket on the way out. On the way out, they were all invited to an Alpha course. And as a result of that, they've had to start a church. So many people have come to faith. I was speaking to another leader recently, and I flippantly said to them, you know, what? So I said, Sam, what's their church had grown by kind of, I think, over 100 in the last kind of 18 months. I said, what's the silver bullet? Kind of flippantly. He said, I go to the toddler group and I work the room. I was expecting him to kind of say there is no silver bullet, but he said the single biggest thing that he'd done was at his toddler group, he walked around and he made sure that every parent, carer, grandparent was invited to come to church on a Sunday or come to an exploratory course or whatever was next. And that made such a difference. And so, I think my encouragement to you, and sport's a great way of doing that, of having that bridge, actually. You know, if you've got, you know, if you run a kind of toddler group or a food bank or a Christians Against Poverty group or whatever it is, and there's this opportunity in the summer to run a, you know, Christians in Sport quiz or whatever it is, make sure you invite everyone because you never know where people are at, and the fruit you see as a result of that could be really significant.
Yeah, that's really good. And again, I think immediately then of the thousands of parents who stand on touchlines on Saturday and Sunday mornings, and the hundreds of thousands of people they'll know. And I think you can do it precisely that. I think you can go up that extra step that you describe here, the invite. There's something about watching a game when your kids are playing. There's an entirely different thing about maybe being the parents who sort out food when the game's on. Loads of times people haven't got coffees and that kind of thing. You sort that out. But then you're building a bridge. It's intentional, isn't it? Then at the end of the season, Reedy, I know you do this at your church. At the end of the season, you put something on and invite everybody from the football club to come to, from the tennis club, from the cricket club. And it's a social. It's a social. That's the intentionality. But people are willing to take their kids to the game, but they just don't have enough time in life to do the intentional stuff beyond that and the relational stuff beyond it. You've done this really, haven't you? You've got to go out here.
Yeah, no, we've found it in our church where we, like you say, is in Malik is in around the sort of mercy ministry. Like you say, it's providing those opportunities which people otherwise wouldn't have or wouldn't have time to do. Like you say, putting on food, inviting people around, getting
But
people just to
it's a
hang
kitchen
out.
thing, isn't it? And that's what I love. That's what I love about Phil's work here. It's the food thing. I know we're going to hospitality next, but it's the food thing, isn't it? It is. Don't eat alone. You do not eat alone if you possibly can. It's a great book, isn't it? Just
Well,
don't eat alone.
let's go there then, Phil. Let's go. Where are you going from the kitchen? Dining room?
Into the dining room. The food's going to be served. It's going to be put on a table. It's going to be beautiful. So this is the, it just came from I heard someone's heard a kind of futurologist say in say as we came out of the pandemic that the key word for the church in this season is hospitality. And I think there's something about just inviting people to eat with Christians. Just leading into that, just connecting the two themes that you, as you was just speaking there, Dano, around, one of the best things we can do for our not yet Christian friends is introduce them to our Christian friends, because it just develops some of those kind of plausibility structures again for them. But the food thing around the dining hall, we ran at the beginning of the year a well-being course at church. The simple invite was, do you want to come and explore well-being? And it's a slightly easier question. I've run Alpha at church for many years. It's a slightly easier question than do you want to come and explore the meaning of life? At this season, I think lots of people really want to explore well-being. On the first week of the course, on my table, six out of the seven had not been to not were not churched Christian people. And we said, what are you hoping to get out of the course? And up came anxiety and depression and bereavement. The felt need was extraordinary. But the real magic wasn't the material. The material was great. The real magic wasn't the kind of that certainly wasn't the hosting. It was just a simple act of eating together and sharing stories and conversation with one another. And that's where the kind of magic is. And so I think any opportunity we can take as a church to get people eating together. I was reading recently about Jesus. Apparently, in the Gospel of Luke, there are over 50 references to food. Jesus is either going to a meal, he's at a meal, or he's coming from a meal. There's this kind of iconic formula in Luke where it says the Son of Man came, and it says the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost, and the Son of Man came eating and drinking. And the first is what Jesus came to do. The second is how he did it. And one of the great things, well, I love what you guys do is, is one of the best ways in which to get people eating together is gathering around a sporting event, gathering around a quiz or whatever it is. Let's be lavish with that as well. Don't just put on a kind of, a couple of custard creams. Do it really well and get people around tables eating together.
Oh, brilliant. I mean, you're so right. I know it's unkind, isn't it? But when you show up somewhere and there's meant to be food and guests have been invited to come and it's really rank, it's a curly sandwich. And it's fine, it's fine. And sometimes people can't do more. But boy, what a difference. The cheapest food, it doesn't matter, but nice and pleasant and warm, and you sit around the table and there's banter and laughter and chatting. And the gospel, I don't know, you're 80% to gospel clarity because, as you said, it's plausibility then. And then when somebody says something of Christ at the end of that meal or as part of the quiz, what a different environment that is for people to think, I could fit in here. I could talk to these people. The non-Christian could say, I could talk to these. And by the way, the person who's a Christian who's scared to invite at first, they grow in confidence if they come to that table, don't they? Because if you've got a common interest and you're chatting to people who aren't Christians and you find yourself actually as a Christian who's a bit scared, thinking, oh my gosh, this is fun. This is actually achievable. It's plausible. So brilliant finding on the food. I mean, it's thrilling.
And guys, tell us a bit about kind of obviously with the big sporting summer coming up around these themes. We've lent into kind of friendship and hospitality and mercy ministry, you know, food over the last kind of few themes. What's the stuff that people can really engage with that you're helping churches and individuals around these big summer events, around these some of these themes?
Yes, yeah, so I probably two big ones. One would be as Graham's talked about, sports quiz. We found for decades has been, you know, it's a pub quiz about sport. We try and make it so that if you're not massively into sport, you'll still have a good time. But it's just that it's fun. There's a quiz. You can do a talk at halftime, maybe have a testimony, something which can encourage some conversation. And then, like I said, one of the most important things is some good food. Halftime, food to eat, food to drink. So that's one. That's obviously slightly probably more intentional in terms of there will be a gospel proclamation, but will be a challenge. And then the other thing we've encouraged church to do, we've heard other churches doing quite a lot, is watch parties. Kind of using that terminology, which we're seeing more and more online. Come and watch the Six Nations together. Come and watch now the Euros coming up and the Olympics and the Euros, particularly Olympics. So at our church, we're showing the Euros final. I think we're billing it as a family-friendly way to come and watch the Euros final. You can go to pubs, you can go to big sort of gatherings where you can have your beer, you can drink, great, no problem. But actually, if you've got a 12 or 13-year-old who loves football, your kids love football, you're probably not going to bring them to the pub. And so you're either watching them on your own at home, or maybe with your friends, or why don't you come to your church building, put on a big screen, put up some flags and bunting, have some food, have some drink, a different environment, but a great space to hang out and kind of watch side by side. So I
Brilliant.
think those are kind of two big ones, is put on a watch party. Maybe then you've got an opportunity to invite people to church. We've found doing a talk at halftime doesn't really work. People want to chat about the game, they want analysis. They don't want to be kind of talked to for 10 minutes.
To be fair, Reedy, you'd have to afterwards. Imagine if you watched like a Euros final and you had all the kids there and dads and mums there and daughters. At the end, you know, like when you watch a great game, you're gonna have to go out in the ref, aren't you? You're gonna have to have jumpers for goalposts at the end because we'll all be gagging to play, won't we?
Well, especially if England have lost the final, you know, you're lifting people from the pit of despair.
Well, exactly. So I think this is the thing, that sport is that eight of the top 10 most watched events in the country on TV last year were sports, and the other ones was a funeral and the coronation. It'll be 10 out of 10 this year will be sport. And so people, even casual fans, will get involved with things like the Euros. Olympics, obviously, slightly harder because there's so much on. But hey, Super Saturday, why don't you get people around? There's 100 meters final, 400 meters. We're doing a family fun day at church with, we've got guides around that. So there'll be races. There'll be, have your face painted with your favorite flag. There'll be, we'll have a short talk. We've got a little book we can give out as well, a little tract. We produce a ton of those. So loads of ways you can kind of begin these gospel conversations whilst just gathering people together in a thing which is fun. Like the family fun day works. I've got two young kids. You've got young kids. You're just looking for something to do potentially on a Sunday. And if you're basically going, there's a free barbecue. This is for generosity as well. We don't charge. And it's the biggest conversation we end up having with people who don't know Jesus, is they keep coming to try and find the leaders to go, how do I pay for this? Because they're so used to paying for events for their kids. And we just go, no, church has just decided to put this on for you. It's bouncy castles. There's a barbecue, things like that. And that's the plausibility and the slight confusion, which is a good thing, isn't it? Because that's like, sorry, why are you doing this? What's this all about? And we can say something of Jesus and his love for us. So loads of opportunities to make the most of an amazing summer there. Move us through the film. So
We're gonna
we were dining room. Where are we going next?
We've eaten and we're hungry for information. So we're going to the study. And
Yay.
so and the study's
Big
really
study.
interesting. The study's a really interesting one because you know, I guess, you know, we some people see some of these rooms as trendier than others. This is really interesting because when talking, Jesus asked, how did you come to follow Jesus for yourself? After growing up in a Christian family, the next answer down is reading the Bible. And again, still for non-Christians, when they're looking at where they look, find answers on Christianity after Google, the next answer down is the Bible. And we shouldn't be surprised, should we? You know, Hebrews reminds us that the word of God is sharper than any double-edged sword. And I heard recently the story of a student who said it wasn't a Christian, and he turns up to a lecture with Matthew 16 on his hoodie, and his Christian friend says to him, like, I didn't know you're a Christian, mate. And he says, well, I wasn't, but then I had this dream about God. And so he was so impacted by this dream. What did he do? He starts reading the Bible. And he starts, fortunately, in Matthew rather than Genesis or whatever. Maybe it was the New Testament. And he gets to the bit in Matthew 16 where Jesus says, "Who do you say that I am?" And he realized that his answer to that question was the same as Peter: "You're the Christ, the Son of the living God." And so, in response to that, he gave his life to Jesus and had a hoodie made, say in Matthew 16.
Unbelievable.
But over and over again, we just hear that the Bible plays a really significant role in leading people to the Lord. And so, if you've got someone, if you've got a friend who's not yet a Christian, for their birthday, as well as, something else, if you want to, for the invitation, or for Christmas, buy them a Bible. Even if for a while it sits on the shelf, I do really believe it has an impact. And then the other thing we can do, we can offer to read the Bible with people, and I think both those things together can really make a difference. But we shouldn't be surprised. It's really, really encouraging. But it's a really common theme, and I don't think is going anywhere, despite the fact that for so many people, Jesus, swear word, Noah's Ark's a myth, but yet the word of God, it just on its own is making a difference in people's lives.
Yeah, huge. You'll know, Phil, that in some ways, what we've been striving to do for years is to. You've captured this. You've got six concepts here that brilliantly capture things, and we'll adapt to these. And I hope people listening will have a look at this, think about it, because the pathway we're talking about here, of course, it's not mechanistic, it's not behaviorism, the gospel work, but there's a pathway here that really, really makes sense of things that pretty much all of us listening or involved in this will have experienced. And I think with the Bible, I find I can't say enough. And here's, I find this is a problem, Phil. I don't know how you find this, because people see you as a preacher and they'll be used to you, in churches as somebody who speaks. There's a default mode, I think, which we face. So if you're a professional, as it were, Christian, well, that's what you do, mate. Of course, you'd say teach the Bible and read the Bible one to one. But I think of something that happened the other day which completely smashes that up. It was a young man who plays for a football club, a local football club, and he invited his friends around for supper. They got to know each other, all the stuff we've talked about here. And then he said, "If you ever wanted to look at something in the Bible to work out Christianity, we'll do it." And he told me the story that one of the boys who came, Jack, they did it over three get-togethers, went for a beer, got a bit of Luke's gospel, went through it. And after the second one, they got to the crucifixion quite quickly because they didn't have much time. They got to the crucifixion. And Jack said to his mate afterwards, "Oh, mate," Jack was 22 and not thick. He says, "Mate, I can't wait for next week. I'm dying to know what happens to him." That's what he said. And my friend thought he was taking the mick. And he went, "I'm dying to know what happened to him." And he says, Yeah, well, we do it next week." And he says, "No." He said, "Listen, I can't wait. You're going to have to tell me now. You can explain it next week."
The
He didn't
Netflix
know that.
generation.
Yeah, he knew nothing of the resurrection and he wanted it now. Yeah.
Come
So
on.
I know that in a sense, there's people listening might say, "Oh, that's a bit extreme. Come on, come on." I'm saying, no, it's not extreme. It is not extreme. And number two, there's sheer power. I think of a boy who came to profession of faith at Commonwealth Games. One of the chaplains at the Commonwealth Games bumped into a lad. The lad was embarrassed to meet personally, embarrassed to have a coffee because of teammates. The boy was not a Christian. The chaplain texted him every morning one line from Mark's gospel and worked through, if you like, all the way through to chapter 16. The boy read it. They engaged on texts. And at the end of the week, the boy wanted to have a coffee to talk about how he could follow Jesus. They literally WhatsApped the Bible text back and forth over 5 or 6 days. So the
Wonderful.
word of God is so powerful. And you don't have to be a pro. That's the thing. People will say, "Well, you preach all the time." This is God's word, isn't it? It's powerful. And we should trust it because we're a lot more embarrassed. This is the mad thing I find. We're more embarrassed to talk about using the Bible and reading a Bible with a non-Christian than the non-Christian is. They don't give tuppence. They don't give tuppence about it. So I think we've got to really wise up on this one. I really do.
And I think we can also combine it with some of the others as well. So actually, even just posting Bible verses on our
Of
social
course.
media, I see that with a lot of professional athletes as well. They're often, it's often on their shirt, isn't it, when they lift it up or whatever, or on their Instagrams. Actually, again, that let's not underestimate the power there. that people might see it and be intrigued to read more, as in that story there with Luke's gospel.
No, great. Well, move us to our final room then, Phil.
Great. So for those engaged in sport, we're going outside into the garden, and this is, in some ways is the most encouraging, because I've been in evangelism for 20 odd years, and this is, I've not, in the last 18 months, I've heard more stories of people coming to faith through dreams, visions, and experiences than at any other time during my ministry. And one in five people, through Talking Jesus, describe a spiritual experience as really influential in how they became to know Jesus for themselves. And I was in a church just a few weeks ago, got talking to the guy on the front row, and I said, "How do you fit into this picture?" He says, "Oh, I've not been a Christian long." I said, "What happened?" He said, "I was on holiday in Portugal. I was outside a shop. I had an encounter with Jesus. I had no Christian background whatsoever. I came home. I Googled churches. I met this pastor and I got baptized on Easter Sunday this year." And his journey began, basically, Jesus did the evangelism before anyone else, before any human had an impact. And my just, you often hear stories of people in places where that are close to the gospel, of kind of people having dreams. I think more and more that's happening in the UK. I can't explain why. I think it's just something that God is doing. We experience this locally. We ran an Alpha course 18 months ago in our church. We were in the prayer meeting before the course started. And to be honest, guys, I was really disappointed, because we'd run a massive campaign before. We'd had a cross at the front of church with 300 names on. People were praying for to come on a Tuesday night, and hardly anyone came. I trudged home on the first night, really discouraged. But then on the third night, these guys come during the prayer meeting. And so I go up to them and I'm like, "You all right, guys?" And they said, "Is this Alpha?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "We're not started, but you can come and join the prayer meeting." And they came over. I said, what's your story?" And they said, one of them said, "Basically, I was in prison. I had an encounter with Jesus and I knew I had to do something about it. So I heard Alpha was happening. We walked 4.5 miles. It was a cold January evening. They turned up. They heard the gospel, and all of them have kind of chosen to follow Jesus and been baptized. And it's been extraordinary. But the initial point of contact wasn't a human being. It was just God doing something. And so I think my hope is that we'd be encouraged, to be aware of that, because sometimes we're kind of like spiritual midwives, that sometimes this God births something in people, and we're then God partners with us to kind of help us tell people take the next step, like the pastor in the story at the beginning that I told of the guy from Portugal, but also just to be praying for that as well. One of the things I pray for my not yet Christian friends is, just, "Lord, would you give them a dream? Would you give them something? Would there be some kind of God incidents that happens in their life that would just cause them to think and maybe pick up a Bible or reach out via a text or something?" And so those are the kind of six themes, really. So we started off in the hallway, digital, living room friendship, then into the kitchen, mercy ministry plus gospel, hospitality, the Bible, and then kind of dreams and visions. Yeah. And those for me would be the big six themes at the moment. As I've seen some of the stuff you guys do, really leaning into those. But would encourage wherever you be encouraged, first of all, that God's on the move. But secondly, let's make the most of those pathways.
Yeah, super. Well, Phil, Dano, thanks so much. As we've said, we're really excited to pray ahead and see what God's going to do this summer, but beyond that, within the world of sports, but also wider than that, of course. But it is a matter of summer of sports. So as we mentioned already, we've got a number of resources which you can access as a whoever you are, with the individual or the church, called our Sports Mission Pack. You can find it on our website, christiansandsport.org.uk. It's got ready-made quizzes for you. It's got a guide about how to maybe run like a Sunday service all around sport, a way to invite people in. There's guides of running watch parties. We've created two short evangelistic films, which use the Bible, obviously. They teach people about Jesus through that way, all reflecting on the story of Eric Little, 100 years since Eric Little. So maybe for a particular generation, if you grew up in the 80s, Chariots of Fire, maybe that would be really important for them. And so you could buy books and tracts to give away as well, just give people something to read, put on the shelf to, like you say, it may just get put down on the countertop and then picked up and flicked through, but a great opportunity to do that as well. So we'd encourage you to get that. We'd love you to do that. We do hope and pray. It's been a, I really encourage you to hear about what God's doing.
Where do people go, Johnny, to find out about kind of your resources?
So they all go to our website, christiansinsport.org.uk/2024. You can find out our website. But mostly here, if you're listening on a podcast, you know how to use Google. Google Christians in Sport, you'll be able to find us. That's the easiest way to do it. But Phil, anything to wrap up? What excites you particularly as you think about sports and the opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, I think that as an evangelist, I think one of the things I also see is it, for some people, it takes a really long time. And so if I think, you know, when I was at university, part of a football team, a lot of those lads I knew then are still on a real journey. But my encouragement is even 20 years on, God's still at work. And so just if I can find it, just a couple of weeks ago, got this text completely out of the blue from a mate who I was at university with. And he writes, dude, I mean, we're in our 40s. He shouldn't be using dude anymore, should he? But he says, dude, I've sort of realized there is only one reason to live. There's only one God, one way of getting to eternal life, and I need to grasp it better. And you're like, do you know what I mean? 20 years on, you're like, come on, Lord. But then there's others who it's still a kind of glacial pace, you know, of seeing. But I think, but my encouragement is that my initial connection was football. I probably wouldn't be friends with those guys if it wasn't for that. What sport is an outrageously good way to connect with people. So my encouragement is lean into that, but also don't give up, keep praying. And don't ever doubt that in the long term, God can partner with us to make a real difference in our friends' lives through that initial connection.
Wonderful. Super. Phil, Dana, thanks so much. And thank you so much for listening. See you soon. Bye-bye.